Our final case this morning is BNSF Railway versus City of Edmond, case numbers 21-6000 and 21-6005. Counsel for appellant, please enter your appearance and proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Brian Cleveland, and I'm appearing on behalf of all appellants. May it please the court. The district court's judgment rests on the incorrect reasoning that everything that involves railroads is covered by federal law. The Eighth Circuit has denounced this reasoning as deceptively simple. It denounced this reasoning because federal railroad law is governed by multiple statutes with different preemptive effects, some of which involve federal-state partnerships. Here, there are two relevant federal agencies, the Surface Transportation Board, governed by the ICCTA, and the Federal Railroad Administration, governed by the FRSA. They have separate jurisdictions under their separate statutes, and understanding which agency has jurisdiction over blocked crossings is key to understanding which statute applies and, as a result, which preemption analysis applies. The district court failed to perform this threshold analysis, and its judgment was errant as a result. Now, because there are two statutes, I'll first start by addressing the ICCTA and then turn to the FRSA. Under the ICCTA, there's three points I would like to make, examining some relevant statutory history, examining the precedent, and then looking at the understanding of the agencies in Congress. Now, the statutory history is relevant to the ICCTA because it was not creating a new agency sui generis, but was in fact transferring jurisdiction from the old Interstate Commerce Commission to the new board. The portion of the ICCTA that was quoted by the district court below was in fact not a definition of the jurisdiction of the board, but was rather just describing the preemptive effect of the board's jurisdiction. And while, you know, I understand the appeal of reading the expansive language in the preemption clause as covering everything in railroads, the fact is that the statute the district court quoted opens with the phrase the jurisdiction of the board. And there's a predicate question here of what exactly that jurisdiction is, which is defined under a separate statute, 49 U.S.C. 1302, which specifies that the jurisdiction of the board is all the functions that were passed from the commission to it as of January 1st, 1996. Which I realized then, you know, begs the question of, well, what was that historic jurisdiction? And as is relevant here, did the Interstate Commerce Commission have regulatory authority over crossings? The answer to that is no. The American trucking cases in the late 1960s that went all the way up to the Supreme Court confirmed that the commission lacked all regulatory authority over crossings. Congress responded 4 years later, not by giving this authority to the commission, which it could have done, but instead creating a split in railroad law by creating a new agency, the FRA, under a different statute, the FRSA, in order to reach these safety issues like involving crossings. And this historical jurisdiction persists today in the divide because the FRSA has not been repealed, nor has the FRA been abolished. The line between the commission and the FRA still exists between the board and the FRA today. Now, when you turn to precedent, you'll see there's a difference in the circuits about how they interpret the ICCTA in light of the competing statute. I've cited five circuits in my favor, the 2nd, 6th, 8th, 9th, and DC. The 8th Circuit has said that it reads the board's jurisdiction not to reach everything related to railroad construction and operations, because to give such a reading to the preemption clause would be to ignore other statutes that Congress enacted before the ICCTA and that it knew existed and chose not to repeal when it passed the ICCTA and created the board. The 9th Circuit has phrased the analysis a bit differently. It has said that it applies a canon against implied repeal, namely that when two statutes are capable of being harmonized, you shouldn't give an interpretation to one that effectively renders the other a nullity when Congress has not actually repealed it. And the other three circuits I cited essentially use one or both of those same language. Now, the court on the other side, the 5th Circuit, reads the statute differently, and that's what the district court followed below. It did so across two decisions. The first in 2001 applied the ICCTA broadly with no seeming awareness of the rest of railroad law. But this was changed in 2011 when the 5th Circuit acknowledged the FRSA and declared that it found the two statutes, the ICCTA and the FRSA, to be incompatible. the necessary predicate finding for implied repeal. And of course, logically under that finding, it then applied the ICCTA to all safety issues as well. And candidly, you'll see that there are a number of district courts and state courts that have followed the Fifth Circuit's reasoning. And I'm sure you'll see the chain cited is in the appellee's brief as well. But this isn't an exercise in counting heads, but rather an exercise in statutory interpretation.
Well, and, counsel, yeah. you've invoked precedent, and if Freiberg and all the other courts have held that the ICCTA preempts block crossing laws, why shouldn't we be taking those decisions seriously?
Well, it's not that you shouldn't be taking them seriously, Your Honor, but the fundamental flaw in them.
Are you just saying they're all wrong? Is that your position?
Well, I'm saying that the statutory interpretation in five other circuits is different, and that they all rely on a finding that these two statutes are incompatible.
Well, but when it comes to these blocked crossing laws, do you have a case that has said anything other than that the ICCTA has preempted them?
Candidly, no, Your Honor. And of course, my disagreement's ultimately about statutory interpretation here, because it seems to me that if five circuits have found a way to harmonize these two statutes, that the Fifth Circuit's conclusion that they cannot be harmonized is just wrong based on the harmonizing that was done in the five other circuits.
Let me ask you this. If we agree with BNSF that the blocking statute here does not concern railroad safety, then how would affirming the district court repeal the FRSA by implication?
Two responses to that, Your Honor. First, the FRA itself has defined railroad safety to reach all of these issues. And so if this court interprets railroad safety differently, it will essentially eviscerate a lot of the issues that the FRA asserts jurisdiction over now. But then, and then secondarily, I'm just not sure what would be left to railroad safety if these sort of issues are still committed to the ICCTA, because ultimately railroad safety is about the interaction of trains and cars at crossings.
Well, let me ask you this. If the blocking statute concerns railroad safety, why wouldn't a state law, say, regulating emissions from trains concern railroad safety?
Not sure I follow that, Your Honor. Could you explain a little more?
Well, I'm just saying, if the Oklahoma legislature passed a law that regulated emissions from trains, why wouldn't that concern railroad safety?
I think it's because railroad safety, you know, is ultimately defined by the historic jurisdictional understanding of what's committed to the FRA. I mean, I do understand candidly that, you know, you can't draw a clean line between what's operations or what's safety, because, you know, inevitably safety costs are ultimately operational costs that have been externalized onto someone else, which means you ultimately look to how Congress has divided the jurisdiction between the board and the FRA to learn what things are available to states under the FRA's jurisdiction versus not under the board's.
Well, it matters here to the type of safety, doesn't it? Railroad safety has a different implication than if your clients are passing just a general public safety, public health and welfare type of rule. That makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, Your Honor. I mean, railroad safety has, you know, sort of a term of art in some sense here, because it's referring to a specific agency's jurisdiction. And so it's not that we could just assert the term safety, but it would actually have to be addressing an issue that's under the FRSA's definition of it.
Right. And I think you concede that there is also a sort of a blurred line in this case between safety and operations. I mean, stopping these trains or not allowing these trains to stop in certain places for certain amount of times can affect the length of trains, can affect train schedules, and which both of which can have severe disruptions to the railroad system. And that's something that's generally been preempted, right?
I think, you know, there's some on both sides, because the oddity here is that the FRSA itself specifies that railroad safety reaches every area of operations, which means that, yeah, inevitably safety issues do have some effect on operations. And you can't call it a railroad safety law if it doesn't affect railroads. And so there's a narrow area here that Congress has carved out for state action, even though it will necessarily have an impact on railroads.
Right. And what in your rules pertain to railroad safety? I mean, how is it protecting the safety of the railroad and the people working on the railroad?
I think I'd refer back to how the FRA has described it, that the blocked crossings cause harms to both trains and cars alike from the harmful interactions that happen between them at these crossings due to the blocked crossings issue. And, you know, it seems like it would be odd to define railroad safety as referring just to the trains themselves, because then the state protection for railroad safety laws would mean that states could only regulate in areas where there's not a state interest involved.
Then why draw a distinction between a regulation that was put in place for general public safety and one that was put in place for railroad safety? Under your argument, they meld together and there's no difference.
I don't think that's quite right, Your Honor, because I don't think a lot of things that could be characterized as general public safety fall within the FRA's jurisdiction. It's essentially that narrow subset of things that Congress carved out for a separate agency that's still available for the state to address, while there are many other issues that perhaps could be described as public safety that are still left within the board's jurisdiction. It ultimately comes back to how Congress has delineated the two jurisdictions rather than all the possible ways we could define safety.
Right. What do you do? I mean, I don't mean to take up everybody's time, but what do you do when you run headlong into a situation like you have here where, I mean, maybe these blocked crossings do implicate safety issues, but they also have a strong effect on operational issues as well. I mean, one of them's going to have to give at some point. At some point, One has to win out over the other. Which is it going to be, and how do you justify that?
Well, I don't know that one has to win out per se, because I think they're interrelated, as the statute says that safety inevitably reaches operations.
I mean, BNSF's position is hey, you're disrupting your rules are disrupting the entire train traffic system, with grave consequences to transportation and operations of trains. And I mean, that's their position on it. And so at some point these things run into each other and one of them prevails.
Yeah. And I mean, and my second answer to your question, Your Honor, would be that ultimately the FRA makes the call after it gets data from how states are handling an issue of what will be the final resolution here, because I'm not asserting that, you know, the states can do it and then the feds will never have any involvement. What I'm asserting is that the FRA hasn't acted on it yet and that it can ultimately, because as states have these sorts of laws, that's why there's this cooperative arrangement. The states can find out and experiment for what are the best practices here. And ultimately, the FRA has its preemptive authority where it can intervene and make the final call of what is the correct balance. So we're making the initial attempt here at an airway that we think works, but then ultimately the FRA is the one that's going to make that final call. I think it's also important to remember too that part of the reason that the railroads have ended up in this situation is, as the GAO report describes, that they've increased the number of trains on their rails without increasing the infrastructure to a commensurate amount, which means that they have to put the train somewhere. And the way they've chosen to do that is to externalize their operational costs by parking the trains in surrounding communities. There's nothing about federal law that commands they maximize their profits by externalizing their costs in that manner. Indeed, the safety scheme under the FRSA seems to indicate that there should be action by states, in fact, perhaps an obligation to address these safety issues, unless and until the FRA makes the final call about what will be the nationwide resolution on it. And briefly, just wanted to point, since I've mentioned the FRSA in my briefs, that under the 3rd, 7th, and 8th, and 9th circuits test, you look to see what the safety concern is the state law addresses and see whether the railroad is commanded or has to take any action under federal law to address that safety concern. And because BNSF has conceded that it does not even track let alone address blocked crossings. I think it's clear that nothing in existing federal regulations addresses that safety concern. And thus, I think that the injunction below was inappropriate, and this court should reverse the injunction. I reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Love.
Good afternoon from Oklahoma. Good morning in Denver. My name is Rich Love. I represent BNSF, the appellee in this action, and I represented them below. The Oklahoma blocked crossing statute is designed in its own language to deter railroad transportation operations by fining railroads if they operate their trains in a manner that blocks crossings for more than 20 minutes. There has not been a single case that has examined the blocked crossing statute in any state, in any federal court, that has held that a blocked crossing statute is not preempted by a federal statute, either the FRSA or the ICTA. The majority of the cases in state and federal court have found the ICTA preempts, which is what the district court below did. A minority have looked at it under FRSA and have found federal preemption. There is not a single case that the state of Oklahoma can point to that gets to where they want to get. I'm basically putting rocks over rabbit holes today. I want to address two things in my arguments today. One, I want to disabuse the court of any idea or any notion that there is a split in authority on the way in which the ICTA preemption clause is being interpreted, particularly in relation to a blocked crossing statute. Number two, I wanted to disabuse the court of any notion that there would be any sort of repeal by implication of the FRSA by finding ICTA preemption, as the district court did. The cases that are cited by both parties in this case are in congruity together. There is harmony in the way in which all these cases have been decided on both these topics. I found myself agreeing with most of what Mr. Cleveland was saying about the policy and procedures here, but we have a difference of opinion as to whether or not these particular federal preemption statutes actually preempt these types of act legislations. I'm going to start with the Island Park case, one of the cases cited by the appellant, and that's a Second Circuit case. Because I want to start with it because it applies the proper test. In that case, the court might remember it was the New York State Department of Transportation closed a private crossing because it was dangerous, and that closing was challenged by the landowner. The Second Circuit looked at the broad preemption provision of the ICTA and noted that when it comes to state remedies, anything that attempts to regulate rail transportation is preempted by the ICTA. So what does that mean? It's a two-part test. One, what does the state seek to regulate? Number two, does the proposed regulation burden rail transportation? And so it applied that two-part test. It's one we adopt here, and I think this court, every court actually adopts this two-part test. It adopted that two-part test and found that what was being regulated by the New York State Department of Transportation was the way in which a vehicle goes across the track. It wasn't seeking to regulate rail carriers or the use of those rail carriers' tracks. It cites the Freiberg case, the Fifth Circuit case, as the proper way in which to interpret the ICTA. And in the proper way of interpreting the ICTA preemption provision in particular, there is congruity, there's harmony in the cases that we cite and that the state of Oklahoma cites. So applying the two-part test as the Second Circuit did in Island Park, we look at the Oklahoma block crossing statute. We look at the language of it, and is it expressly preempted by the ICTA? The answer is clearly yes, if you just look at the language used. It talks about how railroads cannot operate over tracks in a way that's going to block the crossing for more than 10 minutes. It gives a couple of exceptions on operational issues that trains oftentimes engage in, one of which is what occurred in our case, where our train pulled over on the side rail and allowed another train that was going towards it to pass. It's called a meet and pass maneuver. It's a scheduling issue. It's an occurrence that happens oftentimes in transportation of rail cars. And for that, the state of Oklahoma gives you an extra 10 minutes. They are clearly on the face of this statute trying to regulate the way in which our trains operate across tracks. And if you don't do it the way that the state wishes you to do it, you shall be fined. And it's a contempt proceeding before the Oklahoma Corporation Commission. the last provision of the railroad of the block crossing statute in Oklahoma says every railroad shall be operated in such a manner as to minimize obstruction of emergency vehicles. This was designed to deter railroad operations with the stated purpose of the safety and welfare of the people. And this goes to Judge Carson's comments earlier, his questions. This is related towards the welfare of the people in the communities. It's about traffic congestion. It is not about the traditional rail safety that we see governed by the FRSA and the FRA.
Counsel, I'd be interested in your maybe elaborating on that point a bit. If from the state's perspective, trains create a safety problem when they block crossings, for example, by impeding emergency responders, why aren't the blocked crossings therefore related to railroad safety under the FRSA?
Well, I don't think that we can. I think it's like Judge Carson noted, there is some gray area. So I think there is a balancing test that the courts have engaged in, including the Fifth Circuit, in both Freiburg and in Elam, the two Fifth Circuit cases. And so I'll take you to a good example, which is actually out of the Tenth Circuit, the Emerson case. And in that, in the Emerson case, what was at issue was public nuisance tort claims, where the railroad was throwing old railroad ties into a ditch and causing a nuisance to its neighbors. And it was tangentially related to the operations, you know, or construction of railroad, which is covered by the ICTA. But in the end, that tangential relationship wasn't enough. And so this court in the 10th Circuit allowed the state cause of actions to lie and to go forward, because while there might have been an argument that the ICTA was involved because of a tangential relationship to construction, i.e. deconstructing railroad ties and throwing them in the ditch, it was not enough to invoke the ICTA preemption clause. And in that Emerson case, Your Honor, the court again cites Freiburg as a proper discussion of the ICTA preemption in the case of a blocked crossing statute. So this court has adopted Freiburg's reasoning. And I want to say something else about Freiburg while I'm on it, which is different than what Mr. Cleveland said. If you look at the Freiburg case and footnote 18, it does address whether this is a rail safety issue, i.e. whether the block crossing statute is a rail safety issue. And it says, no, it's not. Right now the block, the crossing that was, let me back up. In Freiburg, the issue was they're using side rails and they're blocking egress and ingress to a business. So it was an economic issue for the business owner. But in Elam, what was occurring actually was an accident between a rail car and a vehicle in Mississippi, because it was dark. And so one of the causes of action was negligence per se, invoking the Mississippi block crossing statute. And because of the fact that they brought in the block crossing statute, of course, the court had to address it and look at the plain language of the statute and the plain language of the ICTA and determine whether there was a preemption, and there was. But there was a very direct address of the issue of rail safety by the Elam court. It was more fulsome than the one by Freiburg. And it said, look, we need to look at, when we're doing an express preemption analysis, we need to look at the language of the statute. We need to look what's it trying to regulate. It's the same first prong as I articulated for the Second Circuit. What is the regulation that designed to affect? Well, it's designed to affect the way in which a train operates across the intersection. And does that have an adverse effect on rail transportation? Yes, it does, because now the train's going to have to change the way it schedules. It's going to have to change perhaps the length of the trains. It's going to have to change the speed of the trains, so that's continuously moving through that intersection as opposed to stopping. So I think that there is some balancing that's done. I think that the Judge Carson's right. There is some gray areas, but this is an important point. Both Fifth Circuit decisions have looked at the idea of whether this is a safety-related issue, whether the block crossing statute is related to rail safety. And in particular, the Elam court said it's not. It said the particular reason one might be seeking to enforce it isn't the issue. The issue is what it's regulating. It goes back to the first prong of what I've articulated for the Island Park case.
Let me just chime in here and ask you, do you agree that the FRA and not the SDB has primary jurisdiction over crossings?
I do agree, and that's exactly what the SDB articulated in its guidance in the Wannick case.
I'm sorry. Follow up with Judge Matheson's question, which if there was an answer, I didn't hear it. Just looking at FRSA and its language, a state may adopt or continue enforce a law, regulation, or order related to railroad safety, and then goes on that point. If not this, then what? What is an example where that law would apply?
Well, I would say good examples are some of the cases that the state attorney general cites and in trying to buttress its argument that the FRSA doesn't apply. I think the states and the FRSA are certainly engaged with regard to rail crossings, the signals, the speed. Injuries occurred at the where the crossings meet. I think a really good way of looking at this, and one court that actually articulated these differences, is the Court of Appeals case in California, People versus BNSF. That case is actually the only one I've found in my research that actually addresses this particular dichotomy here. But I want to say one thing about the STB, Judge. They acknowledge that, generally speaking, the FRSA and the FRA have jurisdiction over railroad safety. There's no question about that. But they also acknowledge in this Wannick case, which I want to bring to the court's attention, the footnote 10, the STB recognizes the jurisdiction is limited of the FRSA, and that they recognize the Fifth Circuit's decisions, both in Elam and in Freiburg, have touched on the idea of whether or not block crossing statutes are actually rail safety issues. And if the STB has recognized that, no, they aren't, that's the holding. And it's not only the holding in the Fifth Circuit. It's the holding in Kansas. It's the holding in Indiana. It's the holding in Oregon. It's the holding in numerous other states. And we've cited a bunch of them. They're a legion that they've found this way. So I want to also, we're not going to suggest that one shouldn't look at the Tyrell case and what it suggests that we should do in connection with reviewing a block crossing statute. Because I want to get to the second notion. There is not an implicit repeal. You can read these two statutes in harmony, just as every case that has been cited by both sides has done. Remember, you haven't seen a single case that Mr. Cleveland cited that says, by the way, there's this dichotomy. You're at a Hobson's choice, folks. You got to choose one or the other. You can't have an overlap. The STB has recognized that there are instances where there could be overlap. But not in this case, because they recognize the precedent that the Fifth Circuit set, along with all the other cases and all the jurists who looked at this in particular. But I think in Tyrell, you know, the Tyrell case involved not a block crossing statute, but it involved an Ohio regulation of the spacing between two tracks. And the case involved an injured railroad worker who had been walking between tracks, and they weren't spaced wide enough, and he got hit by a passing train in the rail yard. And so the question was, is there a connection to rail safety? And what the Tyrell court did was three things. It looked at the state law's terms. So the terms of the Ohio law specified how rail spacing should be required. It touches tangentially on the ICTA there, because it talks about construction of rails, right? Second, the Tyrell court looked at, are there rail system safety benefits of compliance? Well, the benefit of compliance, obviously from reading the face of the statute, is to protect railroad workers. It's a rail safety issue. We're trying to keep it safe so that folks who walk through them aren't going to get injured. It's exactly what happened in the Tyrell case. And third, how are other state and federal courts characterizing the particular statute? Are they characterizing it as rail safety, or are they characterizing it as an economic issue governed by the ICTA? And in Tyrell, they noted a number of federal and state cases that have looked at track clearance laws and have determined that they are, in fact, more related to rail safety. It's a balancing test that some courts have had to make. And in doing so, they have found that in the case of Tyrell, that it's more related to rail safety. The Freiburg case is the opposite end of the coin of Tyrell, because in the Freiburg, you're talking about, and in our case, because it's just like the Freiburg case, you're looking at a block crossing statute that seeks to regulate the way in which trains operate through an
Hello? Can anyone hear me?
I hear you.
I hear you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay.
I think Mr. Love froze up there.
I think he did. Mr. Love, can you hear us? Looks like he may be reconnecting.
Yep, I'll watch for him in the waiting room, Judge.
All right. There he is.
Okay.
Mr. Love, can you hear us? Your mic is on mute.
An appellate lawyer's nightmare. So I believe I was getting to my summation.
I think you're on the home stretch. Why don't we give you 30 seconds to wrap it up?
All right. And it simply was this, Your Honor. I've been practicing law for 30 years, and I've never been in a case where I haven't had to distinguish a case on point until this case, because there are no cases that get the state attorney general to the point he would like for this court to get. There just aren't. If you picture in your mind's eye this, a map of the United States, and you picture green, that's the state of the case. Of the United States right now when it comes to the block crossing statute. Unless you hold that the block crossing statute in Oklahoma is not preempted, you have a big red right in the middle of the state. And it's no coincidence that a lot of freight travels up through our state and across our state. I don't have any further to say. I just thank the court for the time, and we request that the district court's decision was sound. That it be upheld, that the ICTA preemption does apply. And then the alternative, if it doesn't, then the FRSA preemption certainly does.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Any further questions from the panel? All right. Mr. Cleveland reserved some time. I think you had 20 seconds. I think we added a little bit more on for Mr. Love. So why don't we give you 1 minute, Mr. Cleveland, to give your rebuttal.
Appreciate it, Your Honor. Just 3 points I'd like to make. The first one is that noticed repeatedly in the reference to the Island Park case that BNSF cites what the test is for preemption under the ICCTA. And I wanted to emphasize again that my dispute here is whether this issue is within the board's jurisdiction, not how the board's preemption applies if the court decides this is within the board's jurisdiction. Second, I want to say that the idea that you can apply both the ICCTA and the FRSA together doesn't work in practice because the ICCTA, for starters, says that whatever jurisdiction the board has is exclusive. So if you say it's within the jurisdiction of the board, that inevitably excludes the FRA. And secondarily, because the ICCTA's preemption clause is so broad that nothing would survive under the FRSA and or any purported application of both. And finally, we just note that Congress and the FRA have both unanimously treated this as a railroad safety issue. And so questioning both of their understandings of what Congress did with these statutes is improper, and the injunction should be reversed. Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Love, Mr. Cleveland. We appreciate your arguments this morning, and the case will be submitted. Counsel are excused, and the court will stand in recess until tomorrow morning at 8:30 a.m.